Hello, this is Alton Banks from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from the Triangle Business Journal. Today's program is generously underwritten by Brian Lee Funeral Homes, located in Raleigh, Garner, and Angier. They can be reached at 919-832-8225. They believe every life is unique and deserves to be honored so that every funeral is as unique and special as a person it represents. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Well, let's turn the front page of this week's Triangle Business Journal and see what shows up on the biz page. Under the heading of Food Alert comes the article, New Barbecue Joint Launches in Downtown Raleigh. Excuse my verbal gaffe there, but I started looking at the picture of the food and my mouth started watering. There's no such thing as too much barbecue, and Raleigh's barbecue scene is about to get a major addition. Sam Jones Barbecue, based in Winterville, is opening the dining room at its new location in Raleigh on February the 16th. Jones is a third-generation pitmaster whose grandfather started the Skyline Inn in Aden in 1947. The Raleigh location is at 502 Lenore Street. The opening comes as Clyde Cooper's downtown is temporarily closed with a reopening plan for March. And under the heading of Tough Times comes the article, Ouch, Wake County Numbers Are In. Some bleak numbers are in for tourism in Wake County for 2020, according to Visit Raleigh. For the year, 327 conventions, meetings, and group sporting events were canceled, totaling $175.6 million of economic impact, according to Visit Raleigh. However, 51 rescheduled for future dates. All that contributed to hotel occupancy averaging 44.2% for the year, down a staggering 40.1% over 2019. Hotel lodging tax collections totaled $12.2 million, down $13.7 million from 2019. And prepared food and beverage tax collections totaled $25 million, down $7.4 million from 2019. Meanwhile, Visit Raleigh and the Greater Raleigh Sports Alliance hosted 95 events in 2020, welcoming more than 158,000 attendees to the area and generating $50 million in economic impact throughout Wake County. Also on this week's biz page, under the heading of Taking Flight, drone company links up with American Tower. Raleigh drone technology firm Precision Hawk has struck a deal with a major communications infrastructure provider based in Boston. American Tower will leverage Precision Hawk's autonomous drone technology to inspect its more than 41,000 communications towers in the United States. Drawing on American Tower's expertise, our solution was developed to meet the comprehensive needs of the wireless communication industry by enriching asset inventory and inspection data, says Patrick Lohman, Precision Hawk's Vice President of Telecommunications and Energy Solutions. In turn, this data empowers both facility owners and carriers to improve the reliability of their networks and meet their increasing demands for connectivity. And under the heading of Now in Cary, the article, Charlotte Group Grows in Triangle. Charlotte Real Estate Group Flagship Healthcare Properties had launched a new office in Cary as it continues its expansion in the Triangle. On February the 8th, the company announced the opening of its first Triangle office at 400 Asheville Avenue, making it Flagship's second full-service office location and fourth satellite location in the state. The company has been building its Triangle portfolio over several years and now has eight properties across the region. As we approach 200,000 square feet of clinical outpatient space in the Triangle region, opening an office was the logical next step for Flagship. Flagship CEO J. Brannon Edge III says. And one more small article on the biz page under the heading of Elon Poll. The heading said, the article is entitled, Poll Shows Some Resistance to COVID-19 Vaccine. An interesting recent Elon University poll found there are still substantial concerns about the COVID-19 vaccine in North Carolina. The poll found that 12% of respondents have been vaccinated and 45% plan to take it once it's available to them. But 24% of the respondents said they have concerns, and 20% say they do not plan to get vaccinated. Elon poll director Jason Husser says hesitancy about the vaccine has declined since the school began tracking this in October, but the level of those firmly opposed to being vaccinated remains roughly the same. The poll found that whites are more likely to be willing to get vaccinated than people of color. For example, 29% of black respondents said they would not get the vaccine. Finally, on this week's biz page under the heading of New Opportunities comes the article Food Bank Plots Use of Epic Gift. A major gift from the former wife of Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos has a Raleigh nonprofit thinking big and weighing how to put an end to food insecurity. The Food Bank of Central and Eastern North Carolina was awarded $25 million in December as part of the $4.15 billion that McKenzie Scott gave away. Scott's team focused on several issues, including food insecurity, and gave the money to 384 organizations they found to be highly effective. The food bank serves 34 counties and generally has a budget of around $17 million, although that swelled to $25 million because of the deep needs driven by the pandemic. Peter Werbicki, the president and CEO of the food bank, says a Scott gift will be used in a variety of ways. Some of that is going to be looking at infrastructure in terms of the organizational infrastructure, he says. For example, the food bank leases some facilities and may look instead to purchase some space. It will look at purchasing vehicles, freezer space, and other capital improvements. Some funding will go to helping the food bank's roughly 800 partners. We want to be sure our partner agencies are strong and sustainable, Werbicki says. They are the backbone for much of our work. But a major focus will be how to get at the root of food insecurity. So deepening and broadening those programs will be important, he says. We've evolved, particularly in the last 4 or 5 years, with regard to feeding people and developing initiatives to literally look to end hunger and build solutions, Werbicki adds. Next, we turn to the tech and legal pages of this week's journal. And under the heading of COVID impact comes the article, Bankruptcies Under Watch. Despite the tremendous economic chaos and blow to small businesses the pandemic delivered in 2020, a flood of business bankruptcies has yet to arrive in the Triangle. In fact, bankruptcies took a dive during the pandemic, and despite some projections, have yet to pick up. In January, there were a total of 43 bankruptcy cases in Wake County, less than half the amount seen in January of 2020, when there were 98 filings. Rebecca Redwine, a bankruptcy attorney with Hendren, Redwine, and Malone, says calls are picking up at her firm. At this point, we are starting to hear from some folks who are not quite sure what the landscape is going to be in the future, she says. While some big box stores have made headlines for bankruptcies, small businesses in particular are taking the wait-and-see approach. They're able to wait because, in many cases, lenders are working with business owners while initiatives such as the Paycheck Protection Program are helping firms survive. At some point, I think everyone in this industry feels like there will be a flood that will hit, Red Wine says. Everybody's still looking in that crystal ball to see when those cases will come through. Red Wine guesses the increase could hit in the second half of the year. At some point, the lenders who have so far entered into forbearance agreement, those will run out, she says. As the vaccine is distributed, you'll see people coming back to work and taking stock of where they are. They'll see if their clientele returns to the level that they were at pre-pandemic. Ed Boltz, an attorney in Durham and legislative chair for the National Association of Consumer Bankruptcy Attorneys, says government support helps stave off filings for consumers, but like Red Wine, he sees a flood coming. With the various forbearances and moratoriums on student loan collection, and the government guaranteed or backed up moratoriums and eviction moratoriums, it's all really saved a lot of people from having to file bankruptcy. And there are another couple of short articles on this tech legal page, and under the heading of adding capital comes the article, Durham AgTech Raises $90 million. From a healthier take on salad lettuce to a seedless cherry, a Durham gene editing firm is trying to change consumer produce, and investors are taking big bets on its potential. Pairwise has closed a $90 million equity round. The firm has about 100 employees, 95% in Durham, and is close to releasing its first product, a leafy green with the health benefits of kale and arugula, but with the more consumer-approachable texture of iceberg lettuce. CEO Tom Adams, a Monsanto veteran, says the release of the lettuce, planned for 2022, is just the start. There's a lot of opportunity to create more innovation in produce, he says, kind of like we have more innovation in snacks. We'd like to drive that adoption into innovative produce. Funding was led by Pontifex Global Food and Agriculture Technology Fund. That's a growth capital investor in food and agriculture technology whose portfolio firms include other Triangle companies such as Food Logic, Ag Biome, and Precision Biosciences. Under the heading of Starter Fund, the article, New VC Fund Targets Disruptors. In spite of a pandemic, and in some cases because of it, local investors are pulling together millions of dollars, hoping their cash will help create disruptive technologies and big returns. Those local gamblers include Josh Manchester, the founder of Cary-based Champion Hill Labs, which closed on the $4.2 million CH Venture One fund in January, earmarked at disruptive technologies. Manchester, a veteran of Chapel Hill's TrueBridge Capital Partners and Bay Area firm Foundation Capital, says his newest vehicle is a starter fund, one meant to build on his success in investing in big-name technology firms such as SpaceX and Flexport. Champion Hill initially built to house special-purpose vehicle investments that Manchester was doing on the side, is now targeting capital opportunities across the country. We're running a generalist, contrarian, early-stage strategy, he says, of the new fund. And finally, from this week's Tech and Legal page, comes an article under the heading of On the Move. And the heading is, the article is, Another Exec Departs Red Hat. 2 years after banking nearly $7 million in a stock sale related to IBM's 2019 buyout, another Red Hat executive has left the Raleigh-based open-source software company. This time, it's Delisa Alexander, the attorney-turned-chief people officer at Red Hat, who left the firm at the end of January. Alexander spent nearly 20 years at Red Hat. She was named chief people officer in 2011. Her retirement follows a similar announcement from another longtime Red Hat exec, Aaron Oberai, Executive Vice President of Global Sales and Services. He, like Alexander, saw major returns when IBM bought out Red Hat. Oberoi reported a stock sale valued at $26.8 million when the deal closed. Next in this week's Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the real estate page. Let's see what Caleb Harshberger has rounded up for us this week. Under the heading of Industry Survey comes the article, Builders Wary of Slowdown. North Carolina contractors say they're bracing for another slow year amid project delays, cancellations, and ongoing government cutbacks. The Associated General Contractors of America 2021 Construction Outlook Survey found contractors in North Carolina expect the dollar value of projects this year to be flat or worse than 2020 in nearly all sectors of the industry. The survey found similar sentiments across the country. Everybody's being challenged, says Dave Simpson, CEO of the Carolinas AGC. There's definitely still concern in North Carolina as well as South Carolina in terms of the continuing impact from the COVID pandemic. Some projects are getting delayed, and some are getting called off altogether. Infrastructure and transportation spending is also coming in lower than contractors would like after a tumultuous year at the North Carolina Department of Transportation. The department has faced financial challenges in recent years, and revenue shortfalls due to the pandemic have resulted in billions worth of projects being put on hold. We've been very concerned about NCDOT, but we think things are picking up again. And to the side of this text, the rest of the text continues. A recent report by Los Angeles-based Cumming Corporation found that commercial construction in most sectors in the Triangle are expected to dip to 2016 levels this year, though the company says it expects the industry to recover to pre-pandemic levels as soon as 2022 or 23. We're actually pretty confident about 2021, says Dan Pomfret, Vice President of Forecasting and Analytics at Cumming. The first part of the year we expect it to continue as 2020. We sort of expect it to move forward at the same pace. And even as construction continues its slower pace, companies continue to struggle finding enough skilled labor to fill the roles they still have. Those surveyed told the AGC they've been having trouble filling open positions. Many expect that to continue to be the case as the year continues. Of the top concerns found in the survey, potential labor issues were the top two, followed by rising competition for remaining work and material cost increases. As I started to say a minute ago, there's a little sidebar here on this article, and there's a closer look here, and it bullets several sectors that are expected to grow as well as those that are less likely to grow in the year 2021. So the sectors expected to grow are healthcare, warehouse, and water and sewer projects. Those less likely to grow, retail, higher education, and lodging. Now, a couple of short articles on this page. Coming to Carolina, Minnesota firm snags JLL team for expansion. A national company with a presence in Raleigh has nabbed a team from JLL to launch the company's multifamily investment advisory service in the region. Commercial real estate investment services firm Northmark, that's Northmark, based in Minneapolis, announced it has brought on the sales team of Andrea Howard, Jeff Glenn, John Curran, Alan Lynch, and Kaylor Mark to lead the firm's operations in Charlotte and Raleigh. And under the heading of Durham comes the article, New Townhomes Will Overlook Downtown. A Washington, D.C.-based developer is teaming up with a Raleigh real estate company for its latest downtown residential development in the Triangle, this one in Durham. Lock 7 Development is working with Chappell, formerly Chappell Residential, on its plan for 120 Broadway Street, a proposed 25-unit townhome community featuring contemporary three-story townhomes with rooftop terraces overlooking the city. It's going to be a very urban-style townhouse with private roof terraces, sort of a contemporary industrial aesthetic, says David Gorman, principal at Lot 7 Development. Durham has this really deep industrial history, and our goal on these projects is sort of to mimic some of the characteristics of that. The project is situated at the corner of Broadway and North Streets, across from the Dirty Bull Brewing Company. Lot 7 filed plans with the city last month. And finally, on this week's real estate page, under the heading of News, comes the article, Home Builder Has Big Plans Along River. A South Carolina developer has plans for a massive residential development southeast of Raleigh. Mungo Homes of Irmo has filed a rezoning request with the city of Raleigh to allow for the development of the Hodge Road assemblage, calling for a density of up to 5 units per acre across 513 acres. That's potentially over 2,500 homes. But Withers Ravenel, which is providing engineering and planning services on the project, says Mungo expects between 1,700 and 2,000 units upon completion. The property is situated at 3060 Hodge Road, south of Pool Road. The Neuse River flanks the west side. Permitted units would include single-family homes, townhomes, and apartments, all up to 3 stories tall, as well as amenity, mixed use, and open space. Filings from the neighborhood meeting show home pricing is estimated to range from as low as $220,000 to as high as around $600,000. Now we turn the page to the business page of this week's Business Journal, and the lead article is entitled Pandemic Takes Bite of North Carolina Funds. As the outlook for the U.S. economy remains uncertain in the early stages of 2021, North Carolina continues to see thousands of new unemployment claims filed each week. Since the pandemic rocked the U.S. economy last March, North Carolina has paid out nearly $10 billion in unemployment benefits, a figure that continues to climb. For the week ending January 30, the state had 11,700 initial unemployment claims, which was down from above 13,500 the week before, according to data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Nationally, the figure was 816,247 initial claims for the week ending January 30th. That's a drop of 23,500 from the prior week. More than 1.43 million people in North Carolina have applied for unemployment benefits since mid-March of 2020. Of that amount, 959,000 claimants, or 67%, have been approved for benefits, according to data from the State Department of Commerce. The benefit payments total more than $9.9 billion so far, including $1.84 billion in state unemployment insurance. Much of the rest comes from federal benefits enacted to stem the tide of the pandemic, including $5.32 billion in federal pandemic unemployment compensation, which came about through the CARES Act of 2020. The mounting payments have taken a toll on North Carolina's Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund. The fund, which came into 2020 with above $4 billion in reserve, saw its levels drop to below $2.8 billion by the end of last year, a more than 30% decline, according to data from the Tax Foundation, a Washington, D.C. think tank. But even with that staggering amount, North Carolina's trust fund is still in much better financial position than several other states as of the first week of February. The amount was back above $2.8 billion. The Tax Foundation's analysis found that 19 states had unemployment trust funds that were in the red to end 2020. But North Carolina's at $2.79 billion in mid-December was the second highest amount, behind Oregon at $3.8 billion. The analysis said a faster-than-expected jobs recovery helped many states remain solvent. And finally, a short article here on the business page under the heading of Elite Status comes the article, Umstead Hotel Named Best in North Carolina. The Umstead Hotel and Spa in Cary is the best hotel in North Carolina for 2021, according to U.S. News & World Report's latest rankings. The Umstead sits atop the list of the 25 best hotels in the Tar Heel State, and it should be no surprise as the property just off Interstate 40 is often the recipient of accolades. Travelers rave about the Umstead's appearance as well as its services and amenities, including the soothing treatments at the Umstead Spa, the seasonal outdoor pool, and the AAA Five Diamond Award-winning Heron's Restaurant, the rankings said. At number three on the list is the Fearington House Inn in Pittsburgh. Ranked number two is Old Edwards Inn and Spa in Highlands. Charlotte's the Ritz-Carlton and the Grand Bohemian Hotel in Asheville round out the top five in North Carolina. The best hotel in the country this year? Well, that's the Four Seasons Resort in Lanai, Hawaii, where the room rate is $1,500 per night. Frequent listeners to this program will know that each week's issue of the journal usually has a cover story, and this week's is no different. It does, but it's unusual in the sense that three of the journals in North Carolina, the Charlotte Business Journal, the Triad Business Journal, and the Triangle Business Journal, have come together, these publishers have come together, to do a very deep, exclusive economic survey, and so they have a few remarks to make. And then I'll dive in to read some of the other data, a couple of articles, and a whole bunch of statistics. This note from the North Carolina publishers, that is Abby Malot, market president and publisher of Triad Business Journal, T.J. McCullough, market president and publisher of the Charlotte Business Journal, and Jason Christie, market president and publisher of the Triangle Business Journal. Their article is Better Together. For 2021, American City Business Journal's three North Carolina publications have come together to present a series of informative discussions that hold true to our corporate mission, to help our audience grow their businesses, advance their careers, and simplify their professional lives. The first installment of these statewide programs was the North Carolina Economic Outlook presented on January 21st. As you know, the state of North Carolina is flourishing, attracting organizations and talent from across the world. This virtual event, summarized on the following pages, featured discussions surrounding what's in store for business and local employers, what our biggest opportunities are, and how the COVID-19 pandemic will play into that trajectory. Following the presidential election in November, we launched a survey with our internal research team to our readers across the state. The intent was to get an idea about where people are, specifically in the business community, as we enter 2021. The results are highlighted in the section you'll see on the following pages. While there's benefit in reflecting on what we've experienced over the past year, the benefit is to leverage what we learned and how to apply it as we move forward. Candidly, most of us are ready to put 2020 in the rearview mirror and to forge ahead, in most cases wiser and more strategic because of what we've been through. Our goal in the survey was to gauge business confidence in the economy as well as in themselves as they enter the new year, as they assess the opportunities and challenges they see ahead. The survey pool was evenly divided across the Charlotte, Triad, and Triangle regions, both in terms of employment and revenue, and including broad diversity in the age of their businesses. Together, the owners, top executives, and senior officials who responded to the survey paint a picture of hiring expectations, how they expect to invest, and how they'll operate differently in 2021 than in years past. This is strategic market intelligence you can use to grow your own businesses. We couldn't have done any of this without the strong support of our sponsors, RSM, First Citizens Bank, and High Point University. Leaders from these three organizations joined us for a conversation about their insights on the economy in North Carolina. The conversation was led by Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina CEO Christopher Chung. A special thank you to North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper, who added opening remarks to this conversation. They close the article, "We hope you learned something from this valuable insight." And the first article in this Economic Outlook survey is called "Headed for Better Days, Probably." North Carolina's economy is headed for better days, probably. John Connaughton, Barings Professor of Financial Economics at UNC Charlotte's Belk College of Business, issued a forecast in December predicting a statewide gain in gross state product of 4.5% this year. The severity of the winter wave of COVID-19 and struggles to distribute and administer vaccines have tempered his optimism. "I'm not there anymore," Connaughton says. "I'm not predicting a recession first quarter and second quarter, but I am open to it, more open to it occurring than I was a month ago." Wells Fargo economist Mark Vintner expects things to get much better in the spring and summer after a sluggish start. Vintner expects growth of 4.3% to $518.5 billion and then 4% in 2022. North Carolina's economy contracted by 2.8% to $497 billion last year, according to Vintner's projected final numbers. The common theme of all the economists and analysts interviewed for this story was uncertainty. The pandemic is still the great unknown. My concern is that we can't expect any kind of substantial recovery if we can't get people immunized, Connaughton says. Connaughton and NC State University economist Mike Walden predicted unemployment across the state will decline to 5.1% by the end of this year, which is still 1.5 percentage points above where it stood prior to the pandemic in February 2020. Walden recently predicted North Carolina's recovery will be faster than the nation's, in part because the state exceeded U.S. expansion in the third quarter of 2020. The Charlotte region is a good example of the overall trend in the state. Unemployment was 5.9% as of November, down from a peak of 13.2% in May. Even so, the jobless rate increased by 67% between February and November, with 79,463 unemployed at the end of November 2020. For the Raleigh-Cary MSA, numbers showed a similar pattern. While the jobless rate fell from 7.9% to 5.3% between July and November, the unemployment rate has jumped from about 2.7% in February to more than 5% by the end of 2020. Between March 15, 2020 and mid-January, 1.4 million people in North Carolina filed for unemployment, according to the State Commerce Department. Unemployment statewide increased 69% last year between February, when there were 182,606 jobless, and November. John Quinterno of South by North Strategies, an economic and social policy consulting firm, hopes policymakers will glean lessons from the pandemic response. Despite the flaws found in the Paycheck Protection Program, enhanced unemployment benefits, and other recovery programs, the early savings were largely positive, he says. Savings went up, poverty declined, and household income grew. But those gains substantially faded when Congress and the Trump administration opted against additional recovery legislation until the end of 2020. I think the expanded program showed that it's possible to provide better benefits to more workers for a longer period of time. And so, why can't we do this more normally, Quinterno says. Economists made clear that just about everything hinges on infection rates, how disruptive the more transmissible strain of the virus will be, and the success of vaccination programs. I really think that the trajectory of the labor market is totally dependent on the trajectory of the public health crisis, Quintero says. The sooner we get COVID under control, whether that is through a vaccine or medical treatment, the sooner the labor market will be able to start to recover. Economists said the numbers show how much the shutdown that started last March to slow the spread of infection cost NC commerce. National, state, and metro unemployment rates were all at or near 3.5% in February of 2020. National unemployment reached 14.8% in April, the highest since federal labor data record keeping began in 1948. Jobless rates in North Carolina hit 12.9% last spring before falling into the 6 to 7% range by year end. Christian Lundblad, professor of finance at the UNC Chapel Hill's Keenan Flagler Business School, says the change in control of Congress and the White House is likely to provide more of a lifeline to struggling businesses and workers. The next 6 months or so, I think that elevates the likelihood from some additional federal stimulus that's going to be not only more generous, but maybe in some places that we haven't seen before in state support, he says. Harry Davis, professor of finance at Appalachian State University and economist for the North Carolina Bankers Association, agrees. That's all positive for the economy in the short run. Economic growth will be stronger than it would have been, he adds. No part of economic recovery hinges more on mass vaccinations and herd immunity than hospitality. Some tourism, restaurant, and leisure jobs returned in the summer and fall, but the winter virus surge is likely to reveal additional losses as curfews and capacity limits kicked in, and as many consumers became more cautious. In December alone, the hospitality sector in the state lost 2,800 jobs. That number is much better than what it was almost a year ago. The Raleigh metro area, which includes Wake, Franklin, and Johnson counties, had a loss of 44,800 leisure and hospitality jobs by April, or about 62% of total leisure hospitality jobs for the year. In the past 6 months, about 30% of those jobs have been recovered, according to the North Carolina Department of Commerce. Once we get the vaccine out there and the herding effect of that, these restaurant jobs are going to come back in a hurry, says David, the State Bankers Association economist. People are fed up with eating out of styrofoam boxes. Once they can go out to eat and feel safe doing it, I think restaurants are going to have a tough time keeping up with all the customers they're going to have. Now, that's 6 months away, but that is going to happen. As to industries that have held up, Vintner of Wells Fargo points to financial services, professional services, and tech. All of those industries have a greater ability to work from home, he says. We're continuing to see a lot of businesses move into the Carolinas, and I think that's an incredibly strong positive for the area. Related industries, such as financial technology and tech-influenced relocations and expansions, have spurred further job growth, including moves by Centene Corporation to establish a $1 billion campus in Charlotte. Raleigh's Bandwidth's announcement of adding 1,000-plus jobs in the Triangle and Ally Financial and Truist Financial Corporation's headquarters growth in the city, center city, Charlotte. Our 5,000-plus workers at RTI successfully met the unprecedented challenges of 2020 with adaptability, flexibility, and persistence, says E. Wayne Holden, CEO at RTI International, one of the Triangle's largest employers. As a result of their exceptional efforts, we entered 2021 on very solid footing, expanding our portfolio globally and contributing substantially to fighting the COVID-19 pandemic with our partners. We anticipate having an outstanding year ahead of us as we continue to deliver the promise of science for global good in these difficult times. Appalachian State's Davis and Chuck McShane, Senior Vice President of Economic Research at the Charlotte Regional Business Alliance, cite manufacturing as an area of likely growth across the Carolinas. Manufacturing accounted for $26.4 billion of Charlotte's local gross product of $193.5 billion in 2019, second only to finance and insurance at $28.9 billion, according to Chemura Economics and Analytics. Advanced manufacturing, non-woven textiles such as those in carpet and medical supplies, as well as auto parts, energy products, and machinery parts, is also growing. Economists see possible rough patches ahead for commercial real estate this year. Since last spring, office life has been completely upended, with central business district towers and suburban office parks abandoned in favor of telework. How that reshapes work life, from office layouts to hybrid home office schedules, remains unknown. No one expects a return to business or office as usual. I'm a little concerned, Vintner says. I think we're going to have to deal with some indigestion. We're likely going to see vacancy rates increase as companies move into new buildings. Banks are trying to consolidate their space. Another sign of the shifting real estate market is the amount of sublease space available. According to data compiled by CBRE, sublease space in Charlotte, for example, surpassed 1 million square feet late last year, eclipsing the peak of 964,000 square feet during the Great Recession of 2008. I'd be a cautious investor in commercial space, NC State's Walden says. However, what can save the sector and allow it to continue prospering is strong growth in North Carolina's urban areas due to increased in-migration from out of state. So even though remote working is here to stay, a large workforce could still fill the downtown towers in Raleigh and Charlotte. Now for closing out the Economic Outlook Survey of this week's Triangle Business Journal. We have some community voices. As you know, every issue of Triangle Business Journal has an executive voice, and so I think it fitting that having this economic outlook summary in this week's paper, having community voices makes sense. So I'll just read these three particular community voices in no specific order. The first belongs to Mac Paul, who's a partner at Morningstar Law Group in Raleigh. As 2021 begins, we expect continued strong demand from our business clients confronting COVID cost challenging. We are helping pharmaceutical companies continue their work on vaccines and therapies. Clients continue to need assistance with pandemic-related protocols and transitions with employees. We're working with many clients whose supply chains were disrupted as they solve these issues. And we're fielding an unprecedented number of calls from investors and real estate developers looking in to get into a market known for its knowledge workers, wonderful amenities, and healthy environment. Also, the productivity of our attorneys, and I suspect many others, who have worked at this time, is through the roof. The anxiety, sadness, and boredom brought on by this pandemic has been largely channeled into work. Once we are all vaccinated later this year, we could see a mass exodus for a much-needed break in Tahiti. My hope and belief is that the local businesses, nonprofits, and industries that require face-to-face interactions will see a massive resurgence. The second community voice belongs to John McKinney, who is president of Alfred Williams & Company in Raleigh. We see 2021 looking similar to 2020 for our company. Our revenue was down roughly 10% last year, but we're expecting slightly better performance for our Charlotte, Triad, and Raleigh markets this year. It's exciting to rethink the workplace going forward and how we can create spaces that are inspiring, engaging, and functional. Flexible work schedules will drive adaptable workplaces, so developing floor plates that support collaboration, technology, and company culture will be critical. And finally, the third community voice belongs to Scott Byers. Byers is president and CEO of Majestic Kitchen and Bath in Youngsville. For 2021, Majestic expects to realize strong economic opportunity from the ongoing and significant capital investments being made in offices, apartments, and large residential development tracts across Carolina cities and the southeastern United States. Our business divisions in each of those building segments expect to perform very well, and a positive interest rate environment bodes well for our overall industry. We remain focused on delivering certainty to our clients because being a dependable professional trade partner is of critical importance. So providing a safe work environment is needed. And, of course, associated with this survey of the economic outlook, there are all kinds of charts and graphs that are included in this week's Business Journal, and I just don't have time to read all of these. One is a statewide look, and the other is a look around Raleigh-Durham. And I think I'll choose the one around Raleigh-Durham just to give us some idea about what's happening in the in our neighborhood. And one of these graphs, we got a couple of pie charts and a couple of bar graphs. The pie charts, we got a couple here that talk about economic confidence over next 12 months. And Triangle Companies, this is the percentage that feel very or extremely confident. And Triangle Companies are 51% in that category. On their company, on local economy, 34%, on the statewide economy, 28%, and on the U.S. economy, 21%. Now, for North Carolina companies, those same ratings are 54% for their own company, 31% for the local economy, 28% for the statewide economy, and 22% for the U.S. economy. Those two parallel one another very, very closely. There are a couple of pie charts here that talk about the average number of employees and areas to hire in 2021. And so for full-time employees, there are 44, contractors 7, and part-time 11. That's for areas. There's a bar chart here of areas where investment will increase in 2021. And from top to bottom, they are marketing and advertising at 32%, tech adoption upgrades 34%, new products and services 12%, employee training and development 14%, expansion to new locations 26%, new office remodeling 16%, employee health and benefits 6%, acquiring other business, 6%. And then areas to hire, sales, 27%, business development, 22%, IT, 24%, administration, 18%, finance and accounting, 14%, product management, 18%, marketing, 16%, business analyst, 10%, and finally HR at 4%. And finally, on this page of charts and graphs, there are three pie charts which detail staffing plans for 2021, and they have three categories, add, maintain, and reduce. So for these three categories, I'm just going to add report them in that order, add, maintain, and reduce. And, of course, these are in percentages, right? So add, maintain, and reduce. Permanent full-time staff. 35, 56, and 9. Now, part-time staff is 26, add, 65, maintain, 65, that's percent, and then 9, reduce. And for contract staff, 28, 61%, and 11%. And in some news from around the state, there's this short article about adding cash. Albemarle Corporation clears $1.45 billion from stock offering. Albemarle Corporation says its stock offering underwriters exercised their option for an over-allotment of 1.27 million shares, bringing the company's proceeds from the sale to $1.45 billion. Albemarle discussed the exercise in a filing February the 8th with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. The exercise boosted the number of shares sold in the offering to almost 9.8 million. The company plans to use the net proceeds largely to finance the expansion of lithium operations in Australia, Chile, and Nevada, and to explore opportunities in China. that could double Albemarle's capacity to produce lithium from 175 kilotons it will have in 2021. Any additional proceeds will be used to retire debt and for other corporate purposes. The offering was priced last week at $153 per share. The sale totaled $1.95 billion. Albemarle's proceeds were reduced to about $41 million in underwriter discounts and close to $850,000 million in expenses paid by the company. Albemarle is based in Charlotte and owns a lithium mine in Kings Mountain. Next, we turn to the viewpoint page of this week's Triangle Business Journal, and in here we find the editor's notebook. And editor Mukherjee has written an article entitled, "Let's Stop Talking About the New Stadium, Please." In the past couple of weeks, talks about whether Raleigh and Wake County should support building a new stadium downtown have once again resurfaced. The talks gained oxygen after Raleigh Mayor Marianne Baldwin indicated she wants to convene a group to explore various options relating to PNC Arena and a new downtown arena. In theory, starting to talk about the future of the city and the county makes complete sense. And after all, we are talking about the quality of life of our residents. "Should we continue to put money into renovations at PNC Arena?" Baldwin asked at a recent city council meeting. "What do we do 5 years from now, 10 years from now?" She added that she wants to keep the Carolina Hurricanes professional hockey team happy and planted in the city for a long time. "Agreed on all points, but this is not the time to talk about new stadiums and arenas. It will be perceived by most of the community as being tone deaf, and here are at least three reasons. One, collectively in the Metro Raleigh-Durham area, we've just lost about 44,000 jobs as of January, just in the past year. Two, people in all parts of our metro region are fearing evictions and unable to pay their monthly rents or mortgages. Three, the Census Bureau reports that about 739,000 North Carolinians, or roughly 7% of the people in the state, have indicated their household did not have enough to eat. The same census document concluded about 351,000 children in our state weren't eating enough because they couldn't afford enough. Finally, four, a Federal Reserve survey released just a few days ago showed 8 in 10 minority businesses are in deep financial trouble, even after many of them took the forgivable Paycheck Protection Plan loan from the federal government. The percentage of small businesses with more than $100,000 in debt was 44% in 2020, up from 13% in 2019, not including the PPP loans. Collectively, our nation, state, and local leaders should focus on two things and two things only right now: getting people vaccinated and working with local businesses to keep them afloat and keep the employees on the payroll. It's that simple. Every Council of State meeting held by Governor Roy Cooper, every county commissioner's meeting in Wake, Durham, Orange, Johnson, Chatham, and others, and every city council meeting should spend the bulk of their meeting time addressing these two concerns. Because if you don't fix those two things, nothing changes. We also now have quantifiable data, thanks to Wall Street, that show many businesses did really well last year. Almost all of them that had successful 2020 are large companies that find themselves facing fewer competitors because so many of them are going out of business. Not being able to travel and be face-to-face with a prospective customer is hurting small businesses more because Zoom and Teams meetings simply cannot reflect the energy, zest, and passion of an entrepreneur looking to gnaw away market share from corporations. For the most part, our leaders have shown the needed empathy and resolve to address the community's immediate concerns. But spending even 1 minute right now talking about whether to spruce up PNC Arena or build a new arena downtown is bad judgment. The Carolina Hurricanes know we want them in our town, but they can't have an answer from us right now. We have more pressing things, such as livelihood and existence, on our minds right now. Also on the Viewpoint page this week is the article, "As Expected, North Carolina's Largest Metros Shed More Jobs." The North Carolina Justice Center in Raleigh analyzed the latest labor data from the government to determine the severely hit communities in terms of job losses over the past year. The results were far from surprising. The Charlotte, Raleigh-Durham, and Greensboro metro areas lost the most jobs in the state. NC Justice Center officials point out that the economic challenges facing North Carolina include three major parts. One, as the biggest cities recover faster, regional job hubs suffer more sustained job losses. Some of the worst job losses during the first few months of the pandemic occurred in North Carolina's largest cities and tourist regions. Over the past few months, cities like Raleigh, Durham, and Charlotte have recovered more of the jobs initially lost during the pandemic, while many of the job hubs that support other regions of the state continue to see sustained job losses. Two, COVID-19 has either erased all employment gains or deepened losses since the start of the Great Recession in a majority of counties. Nearly 60 of North Carolina's 100 counties had fewer people working at the end of 2020 than before the Great Recession. Many parts of the state had never recovered all of the jobs that disappeared in the Great Recession, so the losses during COVID-19 are further compounding a long-term problem. And finally, three, most counties have seen a huge increase in the number of people looking for work. Even with many North Carolinians having been forced out of the labor market entirely due to illness, caring for a child, or simply not seeing employment opportunities to be found, most counties had far more people looking for work at the end of 2020 than before COVID-19. In nearly half of North Carolina's counties, that's 44 out of 100, the number of people actively looking for work has grown by at least 50% since the start of the pandemic. Finally, this week's Business Pulse question is, what do you think is the key factor driving the Triangle's housing market? And of the 290 responses, 3.4% says the shift to working from home, 15.8% lack of supply of new homes, 16.5% historically low interest rates, and most of the people, all of the above. Well, that music means that we've run out of time for today's episode of the Triangle Business Journal. I hope you enjoyed it, and we'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Alton Banks, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Today's program is generously underwritten by Brian Lee Funeral Homes, located in Raleigh, Garner, and Anger. We thank them for their support. So long till next time.